Welcome to Healing with Ketamine. I'm your host, Dr. Cassius Drake, and we welcome you back to our podcast where we discuss our work at the Drake Center and our use of various healing modalities, psychedelics, spiritual work, mindfulness, meditation, creativity, and the combination of things to support a whole and healthy and happy life. Today for our conversation, we have a special guest with us today, Detroit firefighter Zachary Lessner, who has a very powerful story to share and his journey to share with us, and his work and recovery from PTSD and his journey and recovery with the Drake Center. So, welcome, Zach. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you very much.
Share your story with us. So why don't we jump right in?
Perfect.
So you were a Detroit firefighter, and you first came to us after some things that happened to you. So,
yep, I've been a City of Detroit firefighter for the past 7 years, and seen some stuff, done some stuff. My main takeaway from having PTSD was I was always worried about what other firemen thought of me. I was worried about if I was good enough, because we have the best firefighters in the world. It doesn't matter if they're jumping through windows, jumping off houses. These guys are like the absolute heroes. And one day I would hope to be a percent of what these guys are. And these guys have seen so much more than I have and done so much more than I have, you know, and have 25, 30 years on the job, that I was always afraid to get help because these guys don't get help. These guys, a lot of them do other things to get through it. And the other things just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
My main problem was after the last injury, I started listening to too much smoke, too much, you know, background noise of the guys I worked with, and it just sent me into this just spiraling down black hole. And that's like the number one thing that I can take away from this is just don't listen to other people. They're what they think is probably not true, and most people have bad intentions. A lot of people have good intentions, but you know, when you work with a lot of alphas that are, you know, used to being around this stuff, it's a very competitive place to be.
Yeah. So that be tough attitude and deal with what you have to do, which is effective in a critical situation.
Absolutely.
Right? You do have to.
Oh, you have to be tough.
You have to be tough in some situations, but you can't be tough all the time.
No, and you have to figure out when it's time to talk. And, you know, talking at the firehouse to a group of guys about the call and, you know, debriefing on it is one thing, but actually talking to somebody as yourself and seeing it in a different way is the only way I got through it. And I've talked to multiple doctors, and each doctor has been great, but the way our personalities have stuck together and we just connected. Yeah, so.
It's been a good flow. So thank you so much for sharing that. So why don't you fill in a little bit about how you ended up working with us and when you finally made that decision that I need to do something.
So the City of Detroit sent me to a therapist that is on the SWAT team and who pretty much only works with first responders. And the reason why they chose him is because knuckleheads like me don't want to listen to anybody that aren't public safety, as in you or me, our doctor. Because A, we know more than them, quote unquote, air quotes, which is probably not true. But B, they haven't been in the situations that we have been in to, you know, to see what we've seen. So they're always like, oh yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but they haven't. They haven't picked a dead body off the ground. They haven't picked a head off a building, you know. They haven't, you know, searched down the highway for a car seat because there's a baby in it and then find out that there's no baby. So you're like super, super like worked up, calling MSP, saying, MSP, we need a helicopter and a dog. And then the lady just had a really bad head injury and the baby's with the dad, which is thank God, but just stuff like that.
Yeah. You rattled off a bunch of things. I think for most people, just experiencing that once in their lives would be enough.
Yeah. And I think my gift and my walk with God, even though I may not show it to everybody and I may swear and cuss and just be a complete sometimes I do walk with God. And the reason why I don't show it is because I feel that if you don't walk perfectly and show that walk that you're walking with God, people judge you more because they're like, oh, yeah, he says he's a Christian, but, you know, he's not walking the walk.
Well, that's interesting that you opened that door there. So, you know, and as far as spiritual support in dealing with emotional trauma, seeing really terrible things that are part of your daily existence that you can't avoid because you have to deal with them. And so in yours, you were using spiritual support, and that's a big part of you. And yet sometimes you need something else.
Yeah.
Right. And that something else can be, you know, a psychedelic or a medication like ketamine or you know, a healing paradigm. How did you find those two things gelling together?
Okay, so so that the doctor I was talking about, he told me I had to find a place to do the ketamine treatment. The one place that I found before, they got closed down, and I was praying and I was texting everybody I possibly could and calling. I called U of M, called everybody, and you were the only person that answered. And behind that voice, you know, behind the phone, there was an awesome voice. He was like, yeah, how can I help you? And, you know, it just started from there. And, you know,
And so here you are.
Yeah.
And we hear stories like that a lot. Sometimes things just fall into place.
Right.
And you find yourself and you know that you're in the right place. So why don't you tell us about your experience with ketamine treatment and how that helped you change your relationship?
So before ketamine, with the PTSD and whatever else you want to call it, you know, if I couldn't go to a mall for longer than a little bit, you know, people around me just really just made me think there was always someone going to jump out or something going to jump out at all times. Couldn't go to movies. You know, if I was at the movies, I was watching both doors and wasn't watching the movie. If I was at a restaurant, which I still do, I always had my, you know, my face facing the door. But the thing is the first ketamine treatment that I took that next day, I didn't even realize it. We went to the mall and I was able to sit there and chill, which was the biggest thing in the mind opener that just one already started the process and started the healing, which I would have never even, you know, from somebody that never did, I've never done any drugs ever. And then doing this, it was just like, wow, like this is amazing.
You know, yeah.
Unbelievable.
So you found yourself able to be just
chill,
less on edge,
yes,
less in that fight or flight state.
And the thing is, it's more where your brain's like, hey, you know you can take care of this situation. Doesn't matter if it's an active shooter or medical or whatever. You got this. And then that's what chills you out.
Yeah. It's like, so you have a new place to relate from.
Right.
I have to be ready to take care of this too. Things are okay. I've got this under control. And you can be in a more peaceful place.
Right.
How did that show up for you in your experience with the treatments?
The first one was like a roller coaster. The way I describe it is it wasn't scary. It was just like, just going through time and space and, you know, seeing spaceships and solar systems and just all this amazing stuff. And, you know, and then my thing was, is I didn't like elevators and I didn't like super tight spaces. And my first thing that I did was it stuck me in a hole, literally like a well. And I had to go through this well and get out. And then after that, I was like, it helped. You know, it went through this mind process where I'm like, wow, you know, that wasn't why I was going into ketamine, but it immediately fixed other things that I wasn't expecting it to fix.
Like what?
Like claustrophobia and... Huh. I'm sure more are going to come out while we're talking, but that's one of the main ones that
in a way that these unpredictable experience work, you faced a fear.
Yes.
And in a way, in a situation where you felt safe to face that fear and then came out on the other side with a different relationship with closed spaces and things like that. And that enables you to be in the mall and be okay.
Right.
Right. As a side effect of that. That's great. So anything else that you recall that,
do you want me to get into the third one?
Whatever you feel.
So, the second one I remember was like, it was like a Mayan temple with a bunch of doors. And I tried to open the door, and then something told me I wasn't ready. And that was what I really took from the second one. And it was just getting, you know, and it also said darkness is my friend. So the third one, or the second one went into the third one. And then the third one was, is I had a legit meeting with the devil. And I know it sounds super scary, but it wasn't. It was them, you know, him talking me through that, you know, that life's not just about dying, it's about living. And I know that's a weird thing coming from him, but that's kind of what I took out of it. But not saying that he's a good guy or nothing, because that's not true. But it's more like he pretty much says, I've always lived my life on, and, you know, in the middle, like, I do good and I, you know, kind of like the darkness. And that's pretty scary to me sometimes because, you know, the only thing that keeps me going good is, of course, God. So with the darkness thing, he just said, hey, you know, you need to stop playing on that line. You either need to pick my side or you need to pick the light.
Yeah.
And then when he said that, he's like, hey, you know, you've seen Batman, Superman, Spider-Man and all them. And he's like, I was the one that gave them all their gifts and they are real. And he said that if you come on my side, I'll give you all the gifts you want. So that was like, whoa, yeah, that's, you know, and my thing was, is, you know, watching TV shows and movies and stuff, I always thought to myself, I'd be like, hey, if I, you know, went down a crossroad, what would I say? What would I do? Would I be strong enough to say no, kick rocks? Or would I be like, yeah, you know what? This would be cool to jump super high or, you know, not worry about wearing fire suits and stuff. But I was able to say no. And I knew that was like one of the things I really needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had a face-to-face meeting with darkness.
Yep.
And an opportunity to make a choice to choose the light or the other side. And you made your choice. And then things changed for you.
Yes.
Right? So you made that choice. You sort of came face-to-face with, am I going to live or not?
Right.
And you made that choice. And then how did the treatments change after that?
So instead of it always going down, it always went up. It was always bright, light, you know. And that's even on the outside, too. Before, everything had this dark color to it. Like, it was always a cloudy day, even if it was sunny out. And from, you know, even the first trip, you could start to see the beauty in the flowers. And, you know, it wasn't a cup half empty anymore. It was a cup half full. And, you know, it changed everything.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
So what you've described, I think, is something many people have a concern about when they're considering psychedelic therapy. What if I run into something scary? What if I encounter my darkness? What would you say to somebody who's concerned about that?
So the best way to put it is if you do run into that, you have someone's with you at all times. Well, besides the doctors being out there with you, but there's somebody holding your hand. There's somebody, you know, just making sure you feel comfortable with this to get you through it. There was situations in it that could have been taken as scary, but nothing in there was scary. It was the beings or whatever, but they weren't there to jump scare you or to, everything there is healing, and it may not be like unicorns and rainbows, but it's meant to heal you, and it's not scary. I mean, and the thing was, too, is I did research, of course, Dr. Google before everything, and nobody really says anything. I mean, there's never anybody that says, oh, yeah, I had a bad trip. So, and that's true. I never had a bad trip, thank God. It was not scary.
Exactly. They all serve their purpose in, you know, revealing to you what you need to see to make these leaps in consciousness so that you end up in a different relationship with yourself. So what have you found now since once you sort of made that internal choice, I'm saying no to the darkness, even though that's been my experience, and I'm going to say yes to this new place.
The best way to put it, though, is I think the biggest thing that I got that I don't want to miss out on is before, I always worried about what other people think. And I said a little bit in the beginning, but like, if I would think someone like this conversation now, I'd be microanalyzing it, you know, for days. And this treatment's helped me where God, you know, and whatever there was like, hey, you don't need to worry about that. You're the only person that really matters. And being able to give that up was pretty much what was going to make me kill myself because I couldn't get out the noises. the noises would not go away. It was always like, oh, ah, he's talking over your shoulder, or, oh yeah, they're, you know, they think you're a fireman, or, oh yeah, they think that, you know, you do this or that. And this was finally able to make it where those went away.
Yeah. 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 Thank you for bringing that up. I mean, you, when you came to us, you were
a shell of a man.
You were, yeah.
I was nobody. I was just dark.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And then, that started to change very, very, very
immediately.
Rapidly. And so how are you sustaining that? Is that, have you felt like this has been sustained for you?
I just feel good and I don't want to step back to it. And then if I start the doubting myself, there's a voice in my head that goes, yeah, drop that. You don't need that. So the voice stays with you. You know, your inner self is just like, why are you doing that to yourself? There's no reason, you know, who cares? Just keep pushing on and doing what you got to do.
And that's what, you know, what we're all about in our process, you know, with the Drake Center is, you know, you have these experiences. Mm. And within each of these experiences, potentially, there are these nuggets, you know, these jewels that you can take with you. And understanding that when you have a psychedelic treatment, there is a afterglow, so to speak, that you get and a mood lift that happens from that, which is temporary, and right. And when that fades, what are you left with? You're left with those nuggets. You're left with the memory of those insights. I don't have to be in the darkness, and that's a real choice, yeah. You know, because you've tasted both sides.
And the thing is, too, is I'm going to continue, you know, the treatments with you guys talking, and I wouldn't say treatments, but I'm saying like the sit down meetings and all that stuff, and that'll also help a lot. But one thing that I did forget to, you know, bring up when you said the symptoms of the PTSD. I wanted to fight a lot. Yeah. If I was at a light, someone looked at me wrong, I would want to get out of my car and tear them through the windshield. Mm-hmm. And especially just like, you said the wrong thing to me, or you looked at me wrong, I'm going to want to do something.
Yeah.
And that was the thing about the first treatment, is it started immediately turning it down. Like I was at 1,000, and then the first treatment knocked me down to like 80. And it was like 60, then it was like 50. And now it's like, I can think about it and be like, okay, whatever. But if I still needed to, now it doesn't take away my, you know, my fight. If I need to fight,
talk about that. So, you know, from some, you know, in tough guy think, let's just call it that. This is potentially losing your edge.
No.
How is it tough?
It actually sharpens it, I think, because now you know that if something pops off, you're still strong. You're still, you know, if you train and whatever you train and you're still going to do it. And that was the thing I was afraid of is losing, but it sharpened it. It made it like, now that I can think more while these people are talking or doing or raising their hand or whatever, it just makes you think, be like, okay, what can I do tactically to stop this situation, or how can I stop it? And the thing is with those little bit of time to think, it just, you got the edge now. And it doesn't make you weaker. It doesn't make you not want to protect your family's honor. It just makes you think for a second longer.
Yeah, do I really need to
do
this?
Yep, that's it. Right? And you think about, oh, do I really want to do jail time for someone doing something dumb?
Yeah. You know, I may be right, but is it worth it?
Or I'm probably wrong in the situation. Doing it again.
But being able to take that beating and respond and not react, as we say, happens when you're just existing in a more centered place.
And from being a firefighter too, all the guys that I work with, most of them, you know, you're taught that you have to be able to fight for your honor. And the thing is, fighting for your honor is a big deal, but now it's like, I just don't give a shit. I don't care. You know, you want to drag me through the dust, you want to drag me through the sand, whatever. I mean, I have a word for it, but I don't want to say it on public TV.
But
the thing is like, I just have that new, thank God it's not eating me alive anymore. That's a way to put it.
Okay.
And I couldn't have done it without ketamine. But on the other side note is I don't think it would have worked if I would have done any of the other ways of doing ketamine. Not the drip, not the lozenge, not the nasal, because the thing is when I do it with you, we have the music. We have the, you know, the blanket, the talking through it and everything, and the K-hole. And I don't think that you would get the same response without that, because you're not going to a different place. And without the mask, you wouldn't see all the cool visions. So, and the music is leads on the vision. So that's the one thing I want people to know, is you need to find, come to these guys and try it, because you guys are different than anybody else, period. No one else does what you do.
What's different, if you don't mind? What's your perception of what's different from the other places?
Okay, so the one place was they just sit you in a chair and they just put in an IV and then just slowly drip. And from the guys that I talked to that did it, they said that you just kind of get a little brightness. The one that I looked at online where you put the lozenge, it's more like you think you're tripping, but you're kind of not, and then you could have issues later on. But with mine, there was no question about it. I was tripping. I was immediately bonk the shot, and you're in it. And there's no way you can psychologically fake that. Like, it's not like a fake trip. Mm-hmm. You know, like where some of them could be like thinking they're tripping when they're not. This is no doubt. You are in a different world. You are in a different place.
And that place is healing.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned, I remember you mentioning once that compared to the IV, that it seemed to last longer. What do you think about that?
Well, with this treatment, I just like it because you immediately go into it, you heal, and then you get out of it. And then, you know, you just, it's just immediate. Instead of the other one where it's like, you don't really trip. I mean, I think the only way you can really heal is if you're seeing these things and doing this stuff, because it's actually getting you through it. If you're just getting if you're not tripping, you're not getting the healing.
Fair enough. Okay. Thank you so much for everything that you're sharing. I think this is really helpful for people who may be struggling and trying to decide if this is right for them. So, in addition to the ketamine treatments, you know, we also, you know, we talk about things, we talk about mindfulness and meditation. Right. And I know whenever we have tough guys, strong men come into our practice, mm-hmm. and we start talking about meditating and mindfulness, we sort of get, oh boy, here we go. You know, and so what are your thoughts on that? I remember when, you know, in the beginning, you were like, oh boy, meditation,
well,
here we go.
You know, the main thing was, is at first, I thought it was BS.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you guys brought in the, you know, the Navy SEALs thing. And I'm like, I Googled it. I'm like, do Navy SEALs use this? And it was like, yeah. So I'm like, okay, if these the badasses of the world can do this, I can do this. So when I started trying it, it literally, especially box breathing, it brings your heart rate down. You can shoot better. You can do everything. Because, like, if you get excited and you're, like, trying to put on, you know, put a round down target, and you're, like, kind of moving a little bit, if you do that box breathing, it gets you steady. And you know, and that's the same thing with fire. Like, before, when I first got on the job, they said, psych yourself up and get in that dang fire, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, when I went back to work and I was on the way to a fire, I'm like, I don't need to do that. I'm going to slow myself down. And by slowing myself down, it made me be able to think better when I went to that fire.
Yeah.
It made me be able to see a little bit different things that I wouldn't have seen before, and just running and gung-ho.
Yeah.
Now, the last couple fires I've been in, and of course, we've been outside being RIT team, but... which is a good thing, but we were able to do some cool stuff and, you know, work for the greatest fire department in the world. But The thing is like, if you just slow yourself down just a little bit, it gives you clarity.
Yeah. Yeah. And subtleness to handle tough things.
Yes.
You know, I know when I was doing my training as an ER doctor, we were learning ACLS and CPR.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing they said was, what's your first thing? Take your own pulse, you know? And what did that mean? That meant take care of yourself first,
right,
before you put yourself in this critical situation to care for others. Mm-hmm. Take your own pulse, make sure you are good, and then go into a challenging situation and handle it.
And another thing that I wanted to bring up too is I was also worried about losing that gift of being able to, you know, like slow yourself down. Like, as you know, when you get into really bad situations, you're able to slow yourself down where you can be like, you know, seeing stuff. And I did not lose that gift. So you know, so that's like a main thing, is you don't lose any of your gifts from God or whoever you get them from. You just, it helps. It just works on them.
You bring them with you.
Bring them with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So instead of having to be individually strong to handle something, there is an inner strength that you can bring with you.
Yes.
And that's more sustainable. And you can actually handle more.
Yes.
I found that to be true in my life.
As just breathe. When the situations get really bad, don't rip your mask off. Just breathe.
Yeah.
And that saved my life a few times, is just listen to what's going on. One time I was lost in a basement. It was my fault. I shut the door behind me, and it wasn't even that good of a fire. And I'm, because we thought people in the basement, I'm bound there by myself like an idiot. And I'm searching. I couldn't find myself out. I just kept doing circles and circles around the space. So I didn't bring my radio with me, which was dumb. So I'm doing this basement, and I wanted to panic because it starts getting hot down there, and I'm like, oh, great, I'm going to die in this basement for no reason when, you know, why was I down there in the first place? So what I did is I just prayed, and instead of ripping my mask off like I wanted to, and the door appeared. I just did one more loop, and there was no doorknob on it. There was no nothing, and he showed me the way, and I was able to get out of there, and it taught me something, too. First off, always have your dang radio. It doesn't make you cool not to have it. And two, just listen to your inner being, and he'll show you the way.
Yes.
And that, with this ketamine, helped me so much more because I know I can rely on it more. And they even talked to me and said, hey, we're always with you. Because I told them, I'm like, I'm afraid that when this is my last treatment that I'm not going to see you anymore. They're like, we're always with you. We're here.
Yeah.
Right behind you. We are with you, charging into war. We'll always be with you. So that helped because I didn't want to lose this amazingness that I went into.
Exactly. So you get something that you can take with you that you know is yours.
Yeah.
Ongoing. That and isn't dependent on a chemical.
And the thing is, too, is I just want to thank you guys because like I've said before, I did have a plan to kill myself. In October, I went outside in my truck. I had a fight, and I went out there. I had my Glock loaded, put the Glock to my forehead, went to pull the trigger, nothing happened. It was loaded. There was a bullet in there and everything. And when that happened, I was able to see the pink mist. I could smell the blood. I could smell the gunpowder. I could see the window breaking, everything. It was almost like it happened. And I never wanted to feel that way again. And that's when I met you guys in December. And I don't even know why I was in that place. Like, it doesn't make sense. I'm not the same person. He's way over here, not even in the same area. So it's nice that the darkness. Now, I have darkness in me that if I need it, I can use it. But it's hanging out.
Yeah.
It's the light and the love and everything is here. So thank you. I couldn't have done it without you guys.
Thank
I swear.
You.
No. So other firemen, cops, military guys, come see these guys. They'll save your life. I mean, and it doesn't take much. It's easy. You just sit in a chair and talk to them and have fun conversation, and they know what they're talking about. They've seen everything. They've done everything, and yeah. You've been a part of it, and you're part, you know, you've been healed by it, too.
Yeah, well, as we say, we practice what we preach because we have needed this ourselves.
Yes.
And I certainly know the things that you could see in first responder and emergency medical work and the very real emotional weight that can have and what it takes to heal from it and what it can do to you if you don't.
Right.
And I've experienced that personally too on both sides. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your gift of healing and sharing your story in the way that you have. It's a powerful story that's going to help people.
Good.
And we really appreciate it. And I think there's nothing more to say about that other than thank you very much. So that's going to wrap up our episode of Healing with Ketamine this month. As always, we thank you for your time and your attention. We look forward to meeting with you again in the future as we continue our discussions on this journey of healing and transformation. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.